What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. We are joined this week by the beautiful, the lovely, the funny, the charming Stephen Bay.
Wow, you are generous.
I shared a bed with you. So we are here at Monster Mania. You can tell in our voices that we're here in Monster Mania, most likely. And we are going to be discussing one of the many, many films that you guys have selected for us. We got a lot of people that emailed us to discuss Silver Bullet. And Steven was very excited when we told him we were discussing Silver
Bullet. Cocaine! I love me some Gary Busey.
So let me real quickly pull up what the emails say about Silver Bullet. Basically, what we were told here was from Darren New Zealand is who we're going to be declaring as the person who picked this. He said, I'm a huge fan of the werewolf genre, and apart from American Werewolf, my favorite 80s werewolf movie is Silver Bullet. In case you're not familiar, Silver Bullet came out in 1985 and stars Gary Busey and Corey Haim and was taken from the Stephen King short story Cycle of the Werewolf. It also stars Terry O'Quinn, Priest's stepfather, as the sheriff. I've seen this movie 100 times and the practical effects still stand up, though the werewolf in all of its glory isn't exactly the best. There are some great dream sequences and some nice foreshadowing. A buddy of mine guessed the identity of the werewolf from some well-placed altar candles, which he swear looked a lot like wolf ears. Also, he said, I love the podcast. It's great to know that there are people in this world besides me who have seen Rotar. I guess I'll throw my hat in the ring and give you some picks. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. I couldn't get through my workday without you, dude. Don't go changing that intro music. Darren from New Zealand.
Thanks, Darren from New Zealand. I'm so glad that you like the intro music and you have forgiven me for how bad I shit on...
Rotor?
No, not Rotor. I didn't shit on Rotor nearly as bad as I shit on Deathgasm.
Deathgasm.
Which is a New Zealand film.
That is true. But also, thank you for picking a watchable listener submitted.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be possibly the high point of the month.
I don't know. There's one at the end of the month that I am very excited to talk about. So Silver Bullet, as stated, is an adaptation of The Cycle of the Werewolf. A very loose adaptation of The Cycle of the Werewolf.
The loosest. It's basically like, was there a werewolf in this? Can we slap Stephen King's name on a werewolf movie?
Was there eye damage in the movie to the werewolf?
Yes. That's the only things they have in common.
I went to Wikipedia to see, like, oh, what's the difference? And it's like it seems like two pages, and I go, yeah, I'm not going to read that. But I believe Stephen King is actually on set, so at least he was helping them.
I actually...
He's probably high as fuck, too.
I thought... Because usually Stephen King appears in, like, all of these movies or as many of them as he could.
Yeah, he's not in it.
I thought for a split second he was the guy riding the tractor that Corey Haim, like, yelled for help to. Because I'm like, that guy kind of sounds like Stephen King doing his, like, hillbilly voice.
Yeah, his New England hillbilly voice.
But I'm like, he doesn't look like Stephen King. And then I was, like, digging through Wiki to find out if he was in it. The movie opens with the town drunk being decapitated.
Which is really the best piece of, like, violence in the film, in my opinion.
No, I agree. There's a lot of decapitations in this movie. There's a lot of decapitations in a few of them, but this is a good one. But apparently, like, all I could think of was that the person who's in charge of, like, declaring cause of death in this town...
they suck at this.
Started off in the town in Jaws and then moved over here because calling this decapitation an accidental train decapitation is equally as absurd as that severed arm being, like, boating accident. Like, it is... So, like, how does it... It's a clean cut. Like, a train would have... bash that thing into pieces. But we meet Jane and her brother, who's in a wheelchair and played by Corey Haim. And
I hate you, you booger.
Well, something that I noticed by the end of the movie, the narration is super unnecessary. It provides no insight.
Yeah, also, like, it really breaks my suspension of disbelief because she's an adult talking about it.
To no one.
First of all, to no one. Like, it's not like she's telling the story to the police or something. But second of all, the movie takes place in the 80s.
Yeah.
So is she a time traveler?
Yeah.
Like, she's an adult.
The movie takes place in 1976.
It does open up with the title card, The Summer of 1976.
Oh, okay. Well, still.
Yeah. Well, who? Okay.
So she'd be like 22, years. But she sounds like she's 40.
Wouldn't you put the narrator there because you're like, no one survived except me. I'm going to tell. No, what?
Everybody survives.
Everyone survives almost.
Like a couple
at least,
people.
Like, well, I mean, at least do the Stand By Me thing where she's like writing a book. Like, it's just like, why is this disembodied voice telling us anything? It gives us no insight.
Yeah, and like you're talking, like if you were trying to write a book about fucking werewolves, would you be like, no one believe me, but you will.
Yeah.
I'm telling you my story. No.
So we meet
absurd.
We meet this family, and there's this point where early on their car is like driving home, and they have this shitty like homemade little wheelbarrow thing that's dragging the wheelchair in it, and I'm like, why is that in there? Like, why would everybody would just fold up a wheelchair and put it in the back seat? And then it's like they had like two bags of groceries, and I'm like, there is still plenty of space
for this.
Like, there's no explanation. And then immediately after that, Marty's got to like wheel up this ramp, and he looks like he's gonna fall. Like, it is the
there's
most.
There's a part where it looks like he's going to smash the back of his head.
Yeah, it's the most inconveniently built ramp for anybody.
Like... Yeah, and I was like, I felt real bad for Corey Haim for, you know, having to do that scene multiple times because I'm like, man, your upper body strength is not ready for this.
And that was the best take.
That's what I'm saying. Like... But also, it's like, how many takes did he fall?
Yeah, oh, I'm sure plenty. I think that that's what led to the drug addiction. They had to give him so many pain pills.
He had some to get some bars after smashing his head.
It was Gary Buse. He's like, you got some pain? I got some pills.
So then the werewolf shows up again, and it kills a pregnant woman. And I have a note that says, right now, they're barely showing the wolf, but from what I can see, that's probably a good decision.
Like, they should have left the wolf mostly in the dark, like the
I start to refer to it as the gorilla. Like, it's
not a good werewolf.
It's a monkey suit with a wolf mask. Like,
I have it marked down as like
a dog mask.
I have it marked down as like a baby bear, like a baby brown bear.
That's what it looks like from behind. From the back, it just looks like a baby bear.
Like, what? So, did it look like she was killing herself with the candy hot tamales? When I looked at it, I'm like, I've eaten those.
So Marty has a motorized wheelchair, and he's like motorizing with his girlfriend van to her like trailer trash dad.
Dude, we're not allowed to talk about it like that. Come on,
sorry. But he is.
Yeah, but then he gets killed real nice.
He's like 1985 Trump supporter, where he's just like, goddamn handicapped kids taking all of our money.
This sounds familiar.
He is like super hateful, standing on his front step unemployed drinking a beer at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. No, that's 2 in the afternoon.
Or 2 in the afternoon, yeah.
I thought that I wrote down what he said, but I don't. I guess not. But like, they're along with your joke about him being a Trump supporter, we can tell that the werewolf is not a Republican because he wouldn't be killing this defenseless unborn baby inside this woman's womb. The explanation later on is that, like, she was going to kill herself, and he was trying to save her soul from damnation because of suicide. But, like, that murder where it's just, like, slash, 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 dead baby, dead woman with the unborn child is like, it's pretty funny. And we're missing a really great line from before that when you see their explanation of like the fact that she's got this baby out of wedlock and she's like, it's your baby. And her boyfriend is like, it ain't my baby. It's your oven, but it ain't my bun. Remember the good times. Know what I mean? Legitimately sounds like.
So he's earnest. We never see his face. It could be. This could have been.
Jim Varney is like, this is my gritty reboot of Ernest Goes to Camp. Ernest goes to camp and fucks his girlfriend.
So, did you notice when Corey Haim was hitting on the girl, he's just like, yeah, this is my I got a blast pack in this thing. And I was like, wow, only in the middle of the country. He's like, Uncle Red put it in. yeah, you're really getting hot.
So speaking of Uncle Red, we finally get to meet Uncle Red, who I've written every character's name except for Uncle Red is always Gary Busey in my notes. But I got a legitimate laugh out of his Jackass joke, which is like how they debut him. Like, that joke was fucking great.
Wait, what joke is it?
He's like, this guy walks into a bar and the guy calls, he's like, you want another drink, Jackass? And he's like, yes, please. And he's like, you gonna pay your tab, Jackass? And the guy next to him goes, why do you always let the bartender call you Jackass? And he goes, he always calls me that.
I wish that my eye rolling was like auditory because, Jesus Christ, this movie is so dumb.
Are you kidding me? That was the greatest joke. Like, I was in love with Uncle Red. Right when he took that, I go, this is my people.
You know who?
I just want to drink Wild Turkey with Uncle Red.
I never realized this before, but fucking young Gary Busey looks like Cliff from Dead Man on Campus.
That's the whole reason that Cliff got the part, is that he just has his teeth. But I did, and you might want to edit this so that, like, cut here, paste here. Tammy's shitty dad, this is what he says about poor Corey Haim. He's like, electrocute them all, balance the goddamn budget. So, like, this movie is fun in retrospect, but while you're watching, you're just like, man.
Well, speaking about him, I got very upset because I'm like, ooh, someone's watching wrestling. Maybe it's Corey Haim. And then it's like, oh, it's Trailer Trash. Great.
Oh, yeah. Beat him up. Bust his chops. Oh, that's it. Oh, that hurts my parts.
And Busey was just making love to that bottle. Like, he was, like, shoving it almost all the way down his throat.
Oh, he deep-throated the bottle on multiple occasions.
And then Mom lays down some truth bombs. I was like, ooh, this is getting
also, it's, like, not even... She's not even being that mean. Like, if I was half drunk and my sister was like, you're a shitty uncle, I'd be like, goddamn right, and just, like, take another swig off the bottle.
According to IMDb, most of Gary Busey's scenes were completely ad-libbed, and that is, like, the least shocking.
So much about this movie.
He does not feel like he fits into the rest of the narrative of this movie at all, and he's the main character.
Like, why is he the main character? Why isn't Corey Haim's
character? Watched him? He's amazing.
Because this was Corey Haim's first movie, and Gary Busey was like an Oscar-winning actor at this point.
That's even more shocking.
Yeah.
That someone gave him an Oscar?
Well, it was for the Buddy Holly movie that he did before he had his, like, motorcycle accident and became, like, whacked out of his mind.
This is my note. This is hard to believe, but this is before Gary Busey's accident. He had the accident in 88.
Oh, shit. So this is... See? It's all...
Yeah. where he hit a concrete wall going 45 miles an hour.
Really?
Yeah. He wasn't wearing a helmet on his motorcycle. And damn. After this, he became, after his accident, because I went and researched and saw him on, like, David Letterman afterwards. He kind of just goes off the deep end. This is the start of it. But he was just like, he would actually tell kids, like, hey, you need to wear a helmet. This is crazy not to. And look what I just did. And he, like, tells how he got all these holes drilled in his head so they could relieve the pressure and let it bleed. It was nuts. He lost 7 weeks of his life. He has no memory.
Wow. That's insane.
Stay off drugs and wear a helmet, kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But his son was the bomb in Frighteners. So, like...
Jake Busey is way better than he has any right to be. Like...
Yeah.
I want to see a Buddy Teeth movie where it's Jake Busey and Cliff from Dead Man Papers.
I don't even know that actor's name. He's just always Cliff. I've seen him in other movies, and I'm like, Cliff from Dead Man Papers.
And we talk about him in another movie this
He's
month.
In a movie that we discussed previously.
What else?
I can't remember, but I remember he was a cop in a horror movie, for sure.
He's a robber in the other one that we're talking about, which is just ironic.
There's a lot of people who are robbers in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. We've got cops, robbers, Indians. Maybe we can get the full village people from
Dead Man Papers. So the Trailer Trash Dad is killed in his little greenhouse or whatever.
Yeah, he's like, but he's so surprised and like, why is the why are the floorboards cracking underneath me? And then he, like, it's such a downer of a kill because it doesn't even show anything. But, like, then we get, like, the, I think this is, now they realize that that shit's going down in the town, right?
Well, they've been already questioning the sheriff, and now it's like Andy, the local crazy guy. They start, like, their vigilante group, yeah, basically.
So, Is that there's one guy,
which is a subplot I thought was going to last a lot longer.
But they all get killed off.
Yeah, like right away. I'm like, isn't that something you stretch out until like the final 20 minutes?
No, like, but like that drunk deputy that's always the chubby dude that's always hanging out in the bar. He looks like Alex Jones. I want him to be like, it's making the friggin' werewolves gay.
Then Lawrence Terry.
Well, bringing
out that peacemaker bat, like in that whole thing. I was in love with that scene.
But why? Okay, maybe I'm skipping forward too fast. But like, why would the werewolf be reticent enough to bash the guy with the peacemaker and then keep it?
Yeah, hold on to it. And then when returned to human form, be like, I should get rid of this evidence.
No.
If only this wooden bat could be burned so that no one could find it.
Damn you, wood. You're the only thing I could think, and it won't work.
Or just keep it at the death location since that's where they all died anyway. Yeah. It's not like a secret.
So he definitely changed back into a human after he got back to his, like, rectory or whatever. Because, spoiler alert, it's the priest.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, it's the dad from People Under the Stairs.
God, that makes so much sense now.
Even before I saw this film, it takes, like, 2 seconds. As soon as the priest walks on the screen at the beginning of the film, you're like, werewolf.
Yeah.
Wait, I was just like,
it's like,
on.
Why else would you cast that guy?
He's so evil looking.
I bet he's like the sweetest person in real life.
Oh,
he's just like, I got this face. Well, God gave me this face.
I was going to say, it's kind of like my friend who like met Bill Moseley and was like, he was like the most like down to earth, like chill guy in the world. And it's like, he only plays the most insane, awful human beings.
Yeah. And like, I think that also gives him that mythology where like, there are a lot of horror fans that are obsessed with meeting Bill Moseley at every comic or at every horror con. I know a couple like that, and I absolutely abhor everything that he's done. Like every movie character is just the worst.
Yeah.
I hate The Devil's Rejects. I don't really like House of 1,000 Corpses.
Well, what about Texas Chainsaw Massacre too?
Ain't going well. But he's annoying. He's not good. And like those are just the ones that come to mind. But I don't understand the cult of Bill Moseley, but I think that that's what it is that he's just so sweet and kind. When you meet him in real life, you're like, God, that's a guy that I want to have a beer with. So, like, Bill Moseley, 2020 Republican ticket.
It's like, it's really cool to, when you're at these cons, you get to, even though we very rarely get to meet anybody, like, hearing people's stories of who they've met and, like, finding out, like, the big thing I found out this weekend, Paul Rubens, super awesome guy. And, like, that's, like, that makes my heart feel good. It's always good to hear, like, the positive story of, like, oh, yeah, we met this guy and he, like, hung out with our daughter and, like, asked her questions and was, like, really cool and, like, signed this thing for free and blah, 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 versus, like, he wore sunglasses and a hat and, like, didn't really smile.
Okay, so story time on that, because I know you're referring to John Cusack.
Yeah.
But when Megan, so everybody that's listening, my wife, paid to meet and get a photo with John Cusack last year at Monster Mania in the spring. And she was like, this is crazy. I don't know why I'm doing this, but this is like the only legit time I'll ever get a chance to meet him and talk to him. And she loves John Cusack. And she went and she was like, thank you so much for being here. And he was like so genuinely nice. He was like, thank you for coming. And they talked for like 2 minutes, which is a long time.
That's a long time at a con, yeah.
And she was like, can I get a picture with you, just on her phone? And he didn't charge her for that.
Oh, that's
pretty
cool.
She got the meat and the, like, whatever signed.
Yeah.
But he didn't charge her extra for the photo. So, like, I understand that John Cusack is not, like, a horror guy. So it's probably not his bag to be around all these miscreants, because we kind of are part of this group of people that, like, are very, very unruly looking, but we're all quite nice when you get to know us. But, yeah, John Cusack, let's temper that argument there. But I want to talk about that battle where they all go out to the... They form this lynch mob to go find the werewolf. So, also,
Corey Haim's shitty friend is murdered off
screen. Oh, that's right. Yeah. And Brady's dad... Actually, I do have a note about how, like, Brady's dad... his reaction to finding his son's body is, like, legitimate. It seems real.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like a legit reaction, just, like, where you, like, kind of lose control of your vocal cords. That guy was, like, pretty good acting in this movie.
Yeah, my note is this guy in a different movie? Because, like, the rest of this movie is just like, do-do-do-do-do, and he's like, this is some serious shit. I got a little scared. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, and that slapstick bullshit happens in the next scene where these two dudes... They're like Abbott and Costello, and they get their legs caught in the bear trap. Like, one of them gets caught in a bear trap. He's like, oh, help me.
And he's when Bulk and Skull go investigating something.
Yeah, and then the other guy's like, let me help you get your leg out. And then he gets his leg caught. And then they both get their legs out, and they can still walk?
Yeah.
Like a bear trap. Like,
why not?
Yeah, like...
These hunters are terrible. I gotta know. I would never go hunting with them. They're just, like, waving around their rifles. They're like... And why does the old man go hunting for a werewolf with a bat?
Yeah.
Like, it's fine in a bar when you want to break up a fight, but I'm like, you need to get a bazooka out after this baby bear.
Yeah.
Well, that happens to be a werewolf.
Well, and if you weren't... So that whole scene happens, and then, as if you weren't, like... already kind of sure that it's the Reverend, then there's that really out of place Reverend having a dream that everyone's turning into a werewolf.
Well, I feel like that was kind of like the... I think that they just gave up the pretense that you didn't know who it was.
Yeah, like they're just like, okay, we get
you know,
it.
And that might be the best part of the movie, because they spent... Do you know what the budget for this was? I don't know. But yeah, he's the...
So the budget on it was $7 million.
Which seems like a lot, but then you see this scene where there are legit 30... werewolves,
which all look better than the actual werewolf.
What I haven't done. Like, how?
Oh, I'll wait until after.
Yeah, there's some reasons. I read some notes on the director was not happy with his werewolf either.
And neither was the producer.
All right.
So Gary Busey shows Corey Haim the silver bullet. His insanely apparently. Faster than a speeding car wheelchair.
Doesn't he need a license to go on a back... I mean, like, okay, I get that it's like... Is this supposed to be in New England, like everything that Stephen King does? Like,
Because I couldn't find
exactly where it was. They didn't really say, but sure.
It looks like it could be like any back road in New England.
Yeah.
It's probably New Hampshire based on Gary Busey's character. Sorry, anybody that listens from New Hampshire. But you know exactly what you are. He would need a license to drive this bike on the highway because he's, like, whipping around at 6 miles an hour. He doesn't have, like, a seatbelt.
He's
not wearing a helmet. Like, Gary Busey, like, 1988 would have been,
I was going to say, if this was 1989, he would be like, put a goddamn helmet on that kid.
Pretty good, Gary Busey. Yeah. Solid. So then Gary Busey's like, don't leave the house, right?
Yeah.
That's the next part, is where it's like nighttime, and he's like, I gave you this gas power, this nitro and gas powered wheelchair. Don't tell your mom about it, for one. Two, don't kill yourself. Three, there's a serial killer, because he doesn't believe that it's a werewolf, but he's...
He makes werewolf references constantly because he named it the Silver Bullet.
Yeah. He's like, don't leave the house. And so what does Corey Haim do? He leaves the house to, like, go shoot off these fireworks.
How do you sneak out of the house in that incredibly loud-ass bike?
Well, my mom... My mom was like wandering in and out of the room as I was watching.
Oh, this
it.
Is the best when women in particular.
Well, and she like, she sees him open the window and like start to climb down the side of the house. She goes, "I thought he couldn't walk," and I'm like, "He's got incredible arm strength."
Yeah, but like, you don't see that when he's
trying to wheel a wheelchair at any moment. But suddenly he can just like.
Yeah.
Fucking American Gladiator Ninja Warrior his way down the side of this house.
It must have been at the end of the shoot. He's just like lifting weights. He's like, I got this.
He's like, I'm feeling so swole right now. Like the pre-workout finally kicks in.
His pec juices were just flowing all up in his arms.
You know what Lance Henriksen looks like when he's like turning into Pumpkinhead? Into Pumpkinhead? Like his just neck veins are like everywhere. Like Corey Haim's like, destroy it. So he goes out, shoot off fireworks, and like hits the werewolf in the fucking eye with a Roman candle, but like a firecracker.
Yeah.
And wouldn't that just explode the werewolf's head?
Probably.
How is it just gonna stick in his eye and the werewolf's like, huh? And then it explodes. But like, and then like the werewolf comes after him and it's the slowest werewolf, like it's running on its hind legs.
Yeah,
like werewolves are scary because they're like, and you listeners can't see it, but like I'm doing this thing with my hands where it would be like, you know, a gallop with four legs. Like that's why I can't catch my tiny little dogs when they don't want to be caught. Like they have four legs, I have two. But like slowest fucking werewolf ever, and it looks terrible when you get a close up with a firecracker in the eye. Like I could make a paper mache better.
So this leads Marty to explaining everything that happened to Jane, who up until this point hates her brother, but suddenly she's just like, I think your werewolf story checks out. Like, so she goes to collect cans for the church, and like, it's her big plan to like find the person with a missing eyeball.
If I had a missing eyeball, I wouldn't be answering the door.
Yeah. But apparently if you're the Reverend, you're just sitting out in like a public area. Like,
I think that he was like tending a garden.
Yeah. It's just do-do-do-do-do. Like,
and he's like, just, you know, like putting the blinder up, like, sure, little kid, you go check in my beer can stash. Yeah. Like, why do you have a beer can stash?
Yeah, go check out the area where all of the evidence is.
Yeah,
I am aware that your brother's also the one who shot me in the face with a candle.
This was actually Roman candle. Really clever, though. She's like, well, I'm going to go and collect cans for the church.
Yeah.
And she went to everyone to get them to find the eye. I was like, oh, what? Would Stephen King like wake up sober one day? He's like, this is a good idea.
That's how you know that it wasn't his idea.
Yeah, something added in there.
That is the least Stephen King idea in any Stephen King movie ever.
So this is the other thing that I appreciate in the movie is that so now the Reverend is pissed off that,
and then he tries to run him down, right?
Yeah, he tries to run him down. They keep sending him notes. That's like the one note was like, I know who you are, I know what you are, you should just kill yourself.
Man, like, is this junior high?
And like, but like the way it's presented is they're like, we just gotta help him out. And like, it's like, that is like the least tactful way to word like the sentiment you're trying to send.
Do you remember the quote Uncle Red has when they're talking to him about the notes?
It's no. Like,
I understand that my niece and nephew are sending little love notes to the local minister suggesting he gargle with broken glass or eat a rat poison omelet. And I'm like, oh my God. Just...
Those are so much more clever than you should just kill yourself. They need to drink some wild turkey and get some better ideas.
But now all of a sudden everybody's on board with the like, oh, the Reverend is definitely a killer just because of like a little bit of paint scraping on the side of a wheelchair.
Because it's specifically the same color as the car.
Yeah.
But like, okay, what was the Reverend's end goal? Like to run the silver bullet with Corey Haim in it off the road?
Make it look like he fell into the river and because he can't swim. He
but
was...
the thing is like he's got super strong arm strength, upper arm strength. We've established this. Like, if that's part of the logic of this movie, like, he's going to be able to swim to the shore. It's like a creek.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, it's probably not even deep enough to drown in unless you really smash your head on it.
He can, like, oh my God, you know? It's like...
It looks like the bridge from Beetlejuice, which is nice. So maybe they're in Connecticut.
Okay, well, it's still...
Well, that's a good connection.
Yeah. He should have just said Beetlejuice three times and, like, had the black and white striped worm come after the werewolf.
Dude, this movie would have became the best movie in the world if that happened.
What if the werewolf was wearing the Beetlejuice suit?
Okay, I'd be all right with that.
I mean, like,
that baby bear would be way more endearing to me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for our gay listeners, Matt's into baby bears. Because that's a like the, that's a term, right? Like a baby.
Oh, hey, man, I'm always looking for a significant otter.
Oh my god, you'd probably find it in the creek below that. That reminds me, I had a dream that we were hanging out with a bunch of otters last night.
You're referring to the animal, right?
Yes. Literally otters. Like, I'm not even kidding.
A lot happened when we were sleeping.
No, yeah, you know what? I was fucking robo-tripping because I took cold medicine and had just crazy fucked up dreams last night. And I kept on waking up, and Matt was snoring like a crazy, like...
I knew I would be. Off. I'm sorry.
Well, it doesn't matter because Steven was out like a light, and I was on... NyQuil, so I mean, like,
yeah, you're tripping balls, you're snoring, and I'm just dead to the world.
Yeah, actually, like, I woke up at one point, and if I would have been more reticent, I would have kind of come over and done the mirror trick under your nose just to make sure. But I was like, he's probably fine. So, like, my last three notes.
All right,
one is a quote, "You see, you meddling little shit," and that's the exact same thing that he said in.
People under the stairs.
Like, he actually, I'm almost positive he calls the brown child a meddling little shit in that movie. Like, it's definitely, this is the more toned down version of that character, but.
Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, like, and then they, the werewolf, the priest can be a werewolf whenever. So, like, Cycle of the Werewolf is 12 chapters, one for every month. It takes them a year and 12 deaths, I believe, or maybe it's 11 deaths because one of them is foiled or something, to catch and kill the werewolf priest. But in this, he can become a werewolf whenever. And I know that we talk about this in Bad Moon, where it's kind of shitty when you play fast and loose with werewolf mythology.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you get away with it a lot better in vampire movies because vampires have a lot more powers. You know, like, werewolves, you turn into a giant animal and you kill people.
Yeah.
But, like, if you can turn into a werewolf whenever, why was he going after Corey Haim in his car when he could just turn into
a werewolf and go after, yeah.
Like, maul him so that people were like, oh, it's another bear attack.
Yeah. Well, this
reverse transformation is actually a pretty solid transformation.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
The actual transformation in front of the sheriff, though, is garbage.
Yeah, that was rough. I was like, ooh, none of the budget went to that.
Yeah. And then, I mean, it all builds to a Halloween night.
Which is also super weird that was like, oh, this is the, we're all good. Like, we're not traumatized.
Yeah.
I hate those endings where, I mean, it's the 80s. They wanted to wrap it up in a nice little bow, but I'm always like.
Yeah, you've got a dead reverend in your house that people are kind of aware you've been sending messages to him that he should kill himself. Like, it and doesn't also, bode well.
He's complicit with it because. There's the guy, we missed that part, where this guy makes legitimately a silver bullet.
Yeah.
And, like, that scene is so Monster Squad.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is, like, exactly like their Kids Save the Day planning montage, where, like, Rudy's making silver bullets.
And,
like, it's done much better in Monster Squad, in my opinion. But, like, the voiceover, this movie, I think my problem with Silver Bullet is the unevenness of it, is that there are some really fun parts... But so much of it is just like, what is this direction? What is this pacing? Like, Gary Busey is just off the rails. Doing rails.
Well, that has to do with the, you know, Stephen King coming down from his coke rails. It's up and down. You have no idea each day.
This was, I think, the same year as Maximum Overdrive. So he was definitely on the rails at this point.
He was... Going on the rails of a crazy train, not like the Ozzy Osbourne song. I think I remember him saying that he doesn't remember writing half of The Shining. Was that what it was?
I think it's Cujo. He doesn't remember any of Cujo.
Yeah, it's Cujo. But the thing is that I don't know. Was he doing coke or was he an alcoholic?
He was both. He was both.
Yeah. Also, the best part about today that no one would know unless I said something, that's why I'm saying something, is Matt's wearing a Stephen King Rules shirt for Monster Squad. So we got a Stephen King reference and we got a Monster Squad reference, and I just must have been like subliminally being like, I should probably talk about Monster Squad. Now, like, he didn't wear that because he knew that we were going to the second day of the con.
Yeah.
Matt wore that knowing that we were going to the second day of the con and there was a hot girl that was wearing one yesterday.
Was there? I didn't even see the hot girl wearing.
She's one of the people that is we saw her. Steven and I. So this is the way that,
because I haven't left the table yet. Yeah,
we spotted her quick too.
Because we were walking around and she had like the mom jeans on. Mm-hmm. And it was her outfit. Like she was doing the who's the main character in
Sean.
She was doing Sean from Monster Squad, but you know, like hot,
yeah,
you know, like with like beautiful Farrah Fawcett feathered hair, and so she's walking around with the Stephen King Rules shirt on, tucked into her like mom jeans, and they were like kind of high waders, like they weren't long enough, and then she was wearing like Chucks or something like that. So that was her. She was in costume, and we saw her. Both saw her because of the Stephen King Rules shirt, and then Stephen took a second look and was like, oof. I think he said something like, ugh, those jeans tucked in. And I was like, I mean, it's era appropriate.
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
What did you guys watch this week?
I want to go first. I watched by the time this drops, I'll have finished the season because I'm going to watch it next week. But I watched the first two episodes of Jessica Jones season 2.
Okay.
And I mentioned this to the two of them when I got here last night, and it's great. Like, I like but don't love Jessica Jones, like, the character and the series. Like, the pacing's a little slow for my taste. I'm an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. guy, as everyone knows, and I like the pacing of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it feels like so much happens every episode. But then with Jessica Jones, it's so much more procedural.
Yeah.
And it's, like, talking about inner demons and feelings and things like that, and I like it. It's... Kristen Ritter is just amazing as Jessica. It's a great show. It's well written, it's well directed, but it's not one of those shows that like I can binge. You know, like I'll binge Ash vs. Evil Dead. I've binged seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like the second time around in like a week and stuff like that. But like Jessica Jones is one of those shows where like I have to really chew on it, like one a day, maybe two a day, because I'm feeling real like lethargic and not want to get off the couch. You know, like I think that I like that Netflix has the street level superhero, like they have the Defenders, you know. Yeah. I like that, but I don't feel like Punisher was really good. Like I actually binged my way through that in like 3 days, but I don't really consider him part of that same feeling, like the Defenders feeling, where it's...
So I've got a weird question, because I've never watched any of the Marvel shows on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
Do you kind of have to watch
fist bumps, yeah, by the way.
Do you have to watch them in the order that like each season came out, kind of?
Yes, you okay. do. Like Daredevil season.
So like I can't just binge all of Daredevil. I have to do like Daredevil and then jump into some other shows and then bounce back to season 2.
I would recommend what you do is you do I think, is it Daredevil season one, Jessica Jones season one, Daredevil season two? I can't quite remember. But
I mean, I can look it up, but it's not recommended to binge the shows without the other, like, reference points that came
in
between.
Yeah, because a lot of it's pretty much, like, chronological.
Okay.
The way they're coming out in real life is kind of like the way that they're happening in New York City in the show, which is frustrating, too, because it's cool because it's world building and it feels like you're watching like one big series instead of
But then
of
you feel like
ones.
You have to sit through shows that you're not into.
You don't really, I don't know, I feel like you might be able to skip Luke Cage. It's a good show until the last like four episodes.
Okay.
Like the guy that got the Oscar for last year got an Oscar.
Was it Moonlight?
For Moonlight. Yeah. That guy. He's one of the antagonists in the cage, and he's great. But as soon as he drops out of the show, it's like, well,
why am I watching?
Goes to shit.
Yeah.
But also, like, the show's not for us.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's important to have representation. Like, that's what a lot of people are talking about with like Black Panther. And
yeah, I was gonna actually get that was what I was gonna talk about for my like. I watched Black Panther, and I thought it was very good. I don't think it's like my top five Marvel movies,
but it's not, you know, like,
but it's, I definitely think that I was talking to a coworker about it, and he said something to me that was like very touching, but he was like, I appreciate that you study my culture. 'Cause like, he's talked to a lot of other people who like don't care about hip hop. They don't care about the history of rap. They don't care about like the different civil rights movements of that era. So he's like, I actually was pointing out things that happened in Black Panther that even he missed. And he's like, how? Like, he's like that. He's like, but that, like, it is one of the, like, there is, at its surface level, it is a very good Marvel movie.
Yeah, but like,
on a higher plane,
it's got a social,
there's, I mean,
as well.
there's shit, like, there's a poster for a Public Enemy album in the background of a scene, which, like, I think for, like, most people who don't follow rap music, it's just like, okay, that makes sense, Public Enemy, but even more important is what the name of the album that the poster represents actually directly links to that character's entire motivations as a human being. Like, it was,
and thank you for being spoiler free, because neither of us have watched.
Yeah. And it's like, it's stuff like that where it's like, it's like they didn't just pick any Public Enemy poster. This particular poster, I just recommend, once you see the movie, let me know and I'll tell you what the name of that album is. And you'll be like, oh shit. Like, it's like a very well thought out decision. But I don't want to say anything else because it is like, I don't want to ever spoil those movies. Also real quick, you had brought it up. I finally sat down and watched all four episodes of The Toys That Made Us. And that is a very fun, quick breeze of a documentary.
Like, it's great to know the backstory of all that stuff.
And even ones I didn't care about. I couldn't care less about G.I. Joe or Barbie. And I found them still very entertaining 45-minute episodes.
Yeah. Now I want a season. They're doing another season.
Well, the theme song says that there's 8 episodes.
Oh, okay.
So I think that they split it in half, and there'll be the other
there
four later.
Be Transformers one. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'm sure there has.
The
to
He-Man
be.
One was incredible.
The He-Man one was really.
I mean,
great.
The Star Wars one is absolutely the best
one. Well, the
He-Man
one was so good because the characters, like those people were caricatures of people. Like the people that did He-Man were just like so larger than life.
Yeah, they need to do. They definitely need to do Transformers. And I mean, let's be real. They need to do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
The amount of toys and the run that show had, where like it got to the point where I think even more so than He-Man or any of those other cartoons, the toys were determining villains for the following week's episode.
Yeah.
Like they were just like, they just had a bunch of dudes at a toy company just making up shit and then sending it to like our animators being like, put it in the show.
How
like,
about how fast some of these guys had to do come up with these designs
and
that's
do mock-ups
insane
and get them to the like the blow molding and stuff. It is just,
well, that's
so
impressive. So you know vaguely Joe from Calbretto and Harley Poe.
I met him twice.
He for a long time was doing a very cool thing where he would buy old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toys and completely repaint them.
Yeah.
And like his whole, because I asked him about it, and he goes, if you look at those toys, like, because it costs so much money to do multicoloring, the actual molds and the designs are so detailed and so, but like the things aren't colored. Like Rat King, if you look at the Rat King toy, he's like three colors. But if you look closer at the toy, he's got like 40 different bugs and insects, like, crawling all over him.
I loved those.
So, like, he just took the time to color them in and make them pop out a little bit more.
Did you post about that at one point?
I sent you a photo of the Rat King. It looks great with all of these bugs really popping on him. But, I mean, I get it. You couldn't print a 14-color, like, action figure.
Think about all the weapons that they would come with. The weapons weren't even, like, popped out of their little, like, matrices.
Yeah.
Like, man, that's taking me back.
But that's my, so...
And I wanted to say one thing before Steven, about like augmenting, repainting, like that's a whole subgenre or a sub hobby, right?
It's
like,
a fun hobby. I've done it a few times. I'm not very good at it.
I'm not very good at it either, but I definitely did it in junior high because I took my Storm. Remember that Storm X-Men boy that had the Z in her chest that you could light up?
Yes.
I somehow had two of them. I don't know why. I think that maybe a friend was like, this one's missing.
Did you make a Dark Storm out of it?
No.
Okay.
I went way more obscure because, as I've told you, I don't know if I said it on the podcast before, but I was, am still deeply in love with Generation X.
Yeah, Generation X is great.
Generation X, like the first run with Husk and Samoa and Skin, M Plate, Chamber, Blink. Because Blink doesn't make it out of the Generation Next, which was the prequel with the bioorganic virus that's based on Warlock from New Mutants.
Yeah.
I wonder if Warlock's going to be in the New Mutants movie. That's if they're doing the Demon Bear saga, which is I believe after he comes to Earth. So I feel like they could have him in it. I feel like it'd be a disservice if they don't have Warlock in it, and they could do it with CGI now. Like it would be phenomenal to see it, but the whole conceit of like Generation Next is that the bioorganic virus that Warlock is made of is now like able to infect people, and it's turning them into like this huge like worldwide network of this computer that's trying to take over the world, and Generation Next like wins, and Blink sacrifices herself, but then she is in Age of Apocalypse, and then she was in Days of Future Past, the movie.
Okay.
Did you see? You guys saw it.
I've seen it. I don't remember much about it.
Okay. Well, when they're in the future, like the dystopian future, the girl that can make those purple, teleportation things, that's Blink.
Okay.
And her like face makeup was right. It's supposed to be like a face tattoo or like a birthmark or something. And so like she looked good, and I was super stoked. Like I was sitting next to Megan because we actually saw that in the movie theater. I can get her to go see anything with Fassbender in it.
Okay.
Like, she's a great wife and will watch pretty much any superhero movie with me, but, like, she'll see anything with Fassbender. Like,
including the Snowman?
No, we did not go see the Snowman.
Don't. It's not complete, and it's bullshit.
Yeah, I've heard bad things about it, but I made a Blink
action figure out of Storm.
And I wish I knew where it was because, like, that was... I made a couple other ones, and then I made the Blink one, and I was like, you know what? I did the best I'm going to ever do.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to do it again.
But I think that that's like a very, normal, childlike thing. I always remembered Mega Ran has like a rap song where he's talking about like his origins of being like a kid growing up, in like Philadelphia, but being really geeky. And, he has like a lyric where he says something about, he would build the action figures, like he would use old action figures to build action figures of characters that they never did action figures for. And like, I always thought that that was like, because I'm like, I kind of relate to that. Like, I remember being like, shit, they don't have a character for this. Well, then I'll fucking figure it out. Like, it's like, I can't remember what the example is in the lyrics, but it's very like, I think that is a very 80s and early 90s childhood thing.
Yeah. I was listening to the radio and like, I can specifically remember the Screaming Trees.
I remember the Screaming Trees.
You know that, you know.
I know the Screaming Trees. I forgot about them. They're like known for the singles soundtrack. Like,
yeah. I Nearly Lost You was on that, right? And Sister.
Yeah.
Was that the Screaming Trees?
I think that's Screaming Trees, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, like that and fucking Gin Blossoms and Toad the West Rocket on the radio while I'm making my Blink character. But anyway,
all right, Steven, wrap it up for us.
And join us next week on Geek History Month when Scott discusses the origins of X-Force.
Oh my God, dude, that would... if that.
What are you doing? We've got to leave.
So mine was really quick. I just started to look up all the werewolf movies from the 80s because I was like, America had to be tired of werewolf movies at this.
We were.
And in the summer of 85, just look at all the movies that came out. Back to the Future, Rambo First Blood Part 2, Cocoon, The Goonies, European Vacation, The Breakfast Club, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, and Commando.
Nice. Like,
wow, what a summer. So I went back and I watched Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, and I'm like, woo-wee, we've come a long way.
Arguably the worst of the Mad Max movies.
That's all I watch is pure trash. So
tune into the Analog Jones show.
Speaking of that, before we wrap up, tell us a little bit about what you do, Steven.
Our show with Matt, the other Matt.
He's legitimately called Other Matt when we talk and the three of us talk.
Yeah. We do a show called Analog Jones and the Temple of Film. We are a VHS podcast, except the weeks when we don't. And we break it down from the box art to the actual trailers in it. And then we go behind the scenes. We get pretty damn nerdy.
Yeah, like to the point where sometimes I'm like, this is shit that I would have never have paid any attention to.
Yeah,
I do.
I love hearing what the trailers are. That's my favorite part of the show. Yeah. It's always so endearing because I'm like, oh, I remember that trailer at the front of my VHS.
Trailers were like something you looked forward to.
Especially the horror movie trailers.
Oh
like,
my God.
I would look forward to watching 20 minutes of like, what else is Full Moon about to put out? Like,
yeah. Well, for me, it was New Line.
But yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, you'd always just get stoked.
They had great ones.
But they also, like, I think that the art of the trailer is dead.
Yeah, no, it's gone.
Because it's like 2 minutes now instead of a minute and 15.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just not the
same. Well, that's my favorite thing about, like, our booth is that there's only a handful of trailers, but, like, I made sure to put trailers for, like, the tourist trap trailer, like, the alligator trailer are so good at because they entice you, but they don't really show you anything. It's like, here's what we got. We got a giant-ass alligator. Come see our movie.
Yeah. Tourist trap, they don't explain the insanity of that.
No. Film. They're just like, hey, here's a bunch of screaming mannequin heads. Check out our movie.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. And way back in the day, trailers used to also be just clips from the movie, so you wouldn't know what the movie was about. They'd give you, like, a minute 45 of just, like, a weird-ass clip.
Yeah.
And you'd be sucked right in. It actually worked. I saw we're going to do the live podcast in this, and Hellraiser 3 actually had one. I don't know why.
Yeah.
That was 1993.
Yeah.
But it's better than the actual trailer because it's just something weird. You're like, I want to watch more.
I've seen it before. Yeah. It's almost like B-roll.
It's like a keyhole. Like, you're looking through a keyhole to see all the movie. You're like, I want to see more of it.
But that's what a trailer is supposed to do. It's going to tell you what happens in the movie. Like, I think that's internet culture has, like, made it so that obviously current trailers make more money by telling what's in the movie.
Because there was some study that showed that, like, people are more satisfied when they know how something's going to end, which is, like, so weird to me.
You know how many movies I think it's because
it, like, does something with, like, the anxiety of, like, if you already know that everything's going to be okay, like, you don't get, like, as anxious watching something. I don't know. I'm just spitballing ideas.
Yeah. Well, maybe people don't want to open their wallets unless they know what the entire plot is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to take the
journey. But MoviePass might be changing that because I feel like if there's more and more people getting movie passes where it's like, I'm going to see it. So don't spoil it.
I would see Red Sparrow if I had movie passes.
Yeah.
But
there's no way I'm seeing it for money.
I would not spend $10 just to see that. But if I bought movie passes, it's like, what, 20 bucks a month or something?
10 bucks.
10 bucks a month. Okay. If I spend 10 bucks a month and I could see that and then I could see Annihilation and I could see Black Panther, right there that makes sense that I would burn 2 hours and 10 minutes on Red Sparrow.
Yeah.
I actually heard a douchebag, like, guy from, guy produces all these movies and everything like that, and he was saying, you know, like, oh, people like to go into a movie knowing what they're going to see, because nothing sells like excess, and for us, where we watch, we're fans, we watch this to gobble up the new stuff and everything like that, but most of America and a lot of the world, they don't, and it's so annoying. Because you can't get these new ideas, and then we have to watch Wrong Turn 6.
I still stand by the scariest trailer that I ever saw my entire life was a kid. Have you ever seen the actual, like, 5 minute long trailer for Psycho?
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's so good.
I might have, but it's not.
Alfred Hitchcock walking you through the sets. And he's this is the hotel. And he goes, and this is the house. Something crazy happens in that house. I can't tell you about it. And then just at the very end, he's like standing in the bathroom and he like looks over at the shower and he just pulls the curtain and just cuts to screaming and then it's over. And it's like, as a kid, I was like, what the fuck? Like, I knew nothing about the movie. I was like, this is unreal. I was so afraid to see Psycho as a kid because of how effective that trailer was.
So, and that actually reminds me of, like, I didn't know anything about Freddy, but I saw some of, like, that original trailer, which is just B-roll from the intro scene where his feet shuffling along in the boiler room and then, like, a cut of the glove and then the glove, like, cuts the screen. It's like New Line Cinema, Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, that is the way you do a scary movie.
Absolutely.
Scary trailer. You know, like, I actually actively avoid anything after the first trailer anymore for anything that I really
because
want
I'm
to
afraid
see.
I'm afraid that it's going to
ruin
it too much
for me. Like I watched the first trailer for Force Awakens and I was like, that's it. That's all I need.
I'm going
to
see it.
I'm going to go. I don't even need to see the trailers to know that I like it.
That's the only downside with the movie pass is now that I'm going to the movies way more, I'm seeing the trailers all the time.
Yeah, I sit through them. Yeah.
So it's like. So I've actually started to get into the habit of being like, you know what? I do want some popcorn. I do. And like being like, I can kill some time at the concession stand. I don't care. Like I'll miss 20 minutes of trailers and be able to pop in just
as
the movie
starts.
That's
so funny because like Meg and I don't go see movies very often because it's a huge time commitment. 2.5 hours. I wish movies would go back to the 90 minute or like 100 minute mark because it's great to have a director's cut where you're at home and you can just absorb.
Yeah.
But when you're in the theater and you have to piss and there's still 40 minutes left of the movie, you're like, come on, because you're going to miss something. But, like, we've been getting to the point where, like, we only go maybe 4 or 5 times a year to see a movie in the theaters, and that's pushing it. And I Megan's like, we're going to be late. And I'm like, no, if it says it's going to start at 7:15,
that's when the trailer
starts. 7:30. Yeah. You have 15 to 20 minutes of trailers.
And if it's a Disney film, it starts at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, because, well, they pulled that short real fast.
Yeah, it's a public outcry.
Well, that was Silver Bullet from 1985. Thank you, Steven, for joining us as always. Thank you for building a website for us. Thank you for doing a really awesome Weird Howling t-shirt design for us. And thank you for doing Analog Jones, which is a delightful podcast that everybody that listens to our show should listen to. We will be back next week with more of these listener-submitted episodes. But thank you, Darren, for giving us a little bit of a silver lining on this. this episode. We'll be back next week with another one of the picks that you guys inflicted on us.
Holy jumped up, bald-headed Jesus Palomino.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include 7 best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs 2 of our hosts that have seen a show with 2 of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see 2 people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.